completely unaware of his screams and pleads. I go to the place in my head where they beat me, where those memories have been locked since the day Grayson rescued me. I go to the place where Vic brutalized me repeatedly until I can't differentiate one from the other.
"Why did you hurt me like this, Vic?"
I scream.
"Why did you take our baby away from me?"
When he's no longer screaming and I'm out of breath, the mallet falls to the side and I drop to my knees. I sit there for a few seconds, numb and emotionally wrecked, my head bowed as I try to drag my scattered soul back from the brink. I take a deep breath, intending to get to my feet, go to Grayson, and leave the no-name bastard to whatever fate he deserves. The man next to me delivers a swift kick to my side, knocking me over. My head bounces off the concrete floor, and while I'm disoriented, he manages to get the knife and free himself from the remaining restraints. I dodge as he swipes it through the air and miss its hissing edge by mere centimeters. There's a swipe of a chair as I hear Grayson get to his feet. But I don't have time to worry about what he's doing. My fingers brush against the mallet and I pick it up, swinging it in front of my face without thought for its destination. It strikes flesh and bone with an echoing crunch, and the man falls to the floor. Silent and still, and I crumble to the ground in a heap of desolation. I want to cry, but my insides are hollow. I want to scream, but I no longer have a voice. I want to rage and rage against the man who orchestrated my demise, but there was no anger on his behalf. There was only a sense of peace, an exorcism of demons. The projector shuts off, leaving me in darkness, and then Grayson's arms are around me, soft and hard and warm and cold at the same time. Somehow, he is everything I need, even if it's contradictory.
"Do you want this?"
he asks. When he said he'd handle Desmond, I never thought he meant he'd use him to start tracking down the men who hurt me. At least, not with this in mind. A sob bursts from my lips.
"What?
Why in God's name would I want this?"
"Tell me, do you want this?"
He brushes the hair away from my face and tucks it behind my ears.
"This is what my life is like, Tessa. It's brutal. It's bloody, just like me. I'm a monster in disguise, little mouse. Is that what you want?"
"Grayson, please. I can't."
His lips take mine in a violent kiss, and I lean into him, needing his steadiness to assuage the broken parts of me. My hands go to his shoulders, and I whimper against the brutal thrust of his tongue.
"You can. Now tell me."
"Yes!"
I shout.
"Yes, I want you. I hate you, but I love you. I haven't stopped thinking about you since the day we met. You're in my dreams. I see you everywhere when you're not around. Despite everything you've done to me, I want you, damn it. Does that make you happy? Why did you make me do this? Why did you bring him here? Did you know I'd hurt him?"
"I brought you here because you can't be with a man like me and expect to live happily ever after. There isn't a part of my life that isn't as dark and brutal as what went on in this room. But the truth is, I didn't make you do anything. The truth is, you and I aren't as different as you think."
I start to protest, but he kisses me quiet.
"That isn't a bad thing, no matter what you think. That man, he was a piece of shit. Lower than the worst man you've ever met. Lower than Vic. He deserved everything he got."
"I just want to forget about all of it. I want to finish everything with Sal and start over. Pretend none of it ever happened."
I wrap my arms so tightly around Grayson that my bicep screams in pain. But I don't care. But first, I think I need to sleep. I'm not drawing judgments about anything, but I'm exhausted. Can we go to bed? I pause for a second. Together?
I just don't want to sleep alone. Not tonight. 29. After a short conversation with one of his bodyguards, instructing them to get rid of the body, Grayson takes me back up to my room. It says a lot that dead bodies no longer faze me. He leads me right to the shower. Neither of us speak. I'm not sure I can find the words to articulate what happened, so I don't try. I lean against the counter as Grayson turns the shower on and disrobes in front of me. He turns and helps me out of my clothes, but it doesn't feel sexual. It seems like he almost cares about me in his twisted way. I don't try to muddle it out, because there's no use trying to understand him. He helps me into the shower and pulls me against his chest. I don't fight it. I can't. I'm not sure I'd be able to, even if I had the presence of mind or the energy. As I relax against his chest, he carefully washes my hair and lathers up my body before dropping to his knees to inspect the scars on my legs. The puckered flesh doesn't have much sensation, but I shiver anyway when he presses his lips to each one.
No one will ever hurt you like this again.
He looks up from his crouched position with a devilish smile.
Except maybe me.
I shiver despite the hot spray. You won't hurt me, I say.
No?
He asks as he gets back to his feet to rinse my hair. No.
What makes you say that?
You could have hurt me when you found me in L.A. I yawn and snuggle closer against him as his hands rub up and down my back. I wondered why you didn't come after me when you found me.
I had things to take care of before I came for you. I needed a house and to settle up with my employers. I didn't think they'd find you so fast, or I would have come and gotten you sooner.
And the video? I ask sleepily. How did you get it? Once I'm clean, he shuts off the water and guides me out onto a towel. He follows closely behind and wraps me up in one to dry me off. As he's helping me dress, he says,
When I got back to the house and you weren't there, I took it to have something of yours, something that reminded me of you. There wasn't much, so I had to settle with that. I wasn't sure if I was going to come for you, but I also couldn't let it be the last time I ever saw you.
And Andrew?
Desmond and I had a talk. He informed me where I could find Sal and Danny as well as Andrew.
He tips my face up for a kiss.
There's no way in hell I'd ever let a man do what they did to you and let them get away with it.
But why the video? Why have me do it?
So you know you're capable of fighting back,
he says. I think you proved that, I say dryly. He kisses me again, and then we fall into bed without another word and sleep until just before dawn. When I wake, I find him already dressed, brushing the hair back from my face. I know without even saying a word that having him is inescapable. With a murmured apology, I slide from underneath the covers and make quick work of the bathroom and brushing my teeth. I return to find him on his feet, prowling around the room. He hadn't been back here since I first arrived, and he looks at it now, examining the things I've accumulated with blatant curiosity. The books I've taken from the library but never read, flowers from the garden, and a set of weights I liberated from the gym.
I always wondered what you were doing here when I wasn't home.
I study him as he picks up a dried flower and twirls it by the stem. Why? He looks back at me.
You fascinate me. Ever since that first day, you've been under my skin, and I can't seem to be rid of you.
Do you want to be? I ask.
No.
He says without hesitation, moving to stand right in front of me, his green eyes as stormy as a summer morning and just as vibrant.
Tessa.
He says softly, and then groans before taking my head in his hands to press a savage kiss on my lips. He practically vibrates around me as my fingers wrap around his wrists. He's barely restrained as his mouth works mine over. There's nothing seductive or sweet about the moment. It's an overtaking,
a siege, and I surrender, allowing him to lay me back on the bed with a sigh. I don't care that it's wrong, or that he's a bad man, or that he's all the things I know I should run from. All I care about is he makes me feel more alive than I've ever felt in my life. With him, I feel like I truly live, like I can breathe. I don't know when I forgave him for what happened to me, for what he made me do, but I have. And now the hunger to have him, to take him, has returned with a viciousness that consumes me.
"Do you trust me?"
he asks. I nod beneath him, silent and expectant, aching for his touch. At my answer, his eyes flutter closed. Careful of my arm, he helps me out of my shirt, and his eyes feast on my bared flesh. He meets my gaze as he drops to pepper my skin with soft, slow kisses. I grip his hair with one of my hands and arch into his touch.
"You want me to stop?"
he says against my throat.
"You want to leave?"
I open my mouth, and he fills it with his tongue instead of allowing me to answer. I forget what I was going to say and suck him deeper inside. His hands find my pants, and he jerkily undoes the button and rips the zipper down. Fingers dip beneath my waistband and tease me, pulling a cry from my lips and my head back into the pillows. Deprived of my mouth, he goes to my ear and suckles the sensitive spot there. I can no more help my response to him than I can stop the sun from rising. My gasp of pleasure fills the room as my pussy pulses with heat and my breasts grow heavy, and my nipples tighten into hard points. Grayson growls his approval as I grow wet between my thighs. He lingers there, his fingers maddeningly efficient as they toy circles around my clit. I give a little whimper as he flirts around the part of me, aching to be filled the most. "Don't stop," I say when I remember how to speak. "Please, Grayson, please stay." At his name, he withdraws his hand, and I squeak out a protest and shoot into a sitting position. When I realize he's only getting to his feet to undress, I quiet and lie back for the show. God, he has an amazing body. It's unreal. And for now, it's all mine. As he unbuttons his shirt, I drink my fill, my eyes feasting on each bared inch of skin until there's a gap in the center of the material. He stops then to untie his boots and kick them off. They land somewhere under the bed with heavy thuds. Unwilling to be a casual observer any longer, I get to my knees and scoot toward him, lifting my hands and resting them on his shoulders. He stills underneath my touch, like a lion allowing a human to pet it. My eyes glued to the action, I slip the shirt off his shoulders and bare his chest to my view. "I can't believe you got piercings," I say incredulously. Unable to keep my hands away from him, I lift them to touch the twin metal hoops and then rethink it, splaying them on his abs instead. "Do they still hurt?"
"I had them before,"
he replies jerkily.
"I got them put back in after Blackthorn, and yes, they do still hurt. It'll be another couple of months before they heal completely."
"Oh," I say, my response breathy.
"If that intimidates you, you're going to be in for a real surprise in a few minutes."
I don't comprehend his meaning since he isn't pierced anywhere else. I swallow thickly, my imagination running wild as my eyes drop to his growing erection. "Oh," I repeat, and choke down my anticipation and excitement. He draws my hands down to his pants, which he'd unbuttoned at some point. My mouth waters as I move until my legs are dangling off the bed and drag his jeans over his hips and down his thighs. He helps me get them off the rest of the way, and then I focus on the thick length of his cock underneath the black boxer briefs. There's a patch near the tip that's darker than the rest, and I bring my mouth to it, needing to taste him, even if it's through a barrier of cotton. As I trace the line of his dick, I glance up to find those hungry eyes burning with intensity. He wasn't lying about the surprise. Even with a layer of cotton separating us, I can feel the hard knot at the top of his cock that must be another piercing. With the scent of him, hot and musky, filling my nose, I lift my hands to his hips and drag his briefs down, baring him to my eyes for the first time. The sight causes my mouth to water, and I take him in both hands to explore. I've never seen a more beautiful dick in my whole life. And there isn't another way to describe it. He's perfect. Thick and long, flushed with color. The head glistens with a drop of pre-cum, and just behind it is the piercing. It's situated vertically and canted slightly forward. There are two beads, one larger at the top and another slightly smaller on the bottom. I imagine it inside me, and I have to squeeze my thighs together as I bring him to my lips to taste. Not expecting it, his hands fly to my hair.
Jesus Christ.
Is all he can get out before my tongue licks away his arousal. I take him into my mouth and moan as his flavor bathes my tongue. Needing more, wanting to drive him as mindless as he'd driven me all these weeks, I take him as deep as I can. The barbell takes some getting used to, but soon I catch my rhythm and focus more on how he reacts to everything than the feeling of the barbell against the roof of my mouth. His hands in my hair guide me until they fist and force me to stop. I release him, and he drags me to my feet to take my mouth with his. His cock sandwiched between us. I arch as high as I can get, but he's too tall for me. I'm gasping by the time he relinquishes my mouth.
"Lie back,"
he says, sending shivers through me. I do as he says, and he helps me out of my jeans and panties as I unclasp my bra and throw it to the floor. His gaze roams over me, and his teeth run over his bottom lip, until he says,
"Spread your legs."
In a voice so commanding, I can't help but obey. I hook them on the edge of the bed, and he places his hands on my knees as he gets to his own in front of me. When I feel his breath against my folds, I throw my head back in abandon. His huge hands grip my hips, and he scoots me closer to the edge before tilting me up to meet his mouth. If I thought he was good at kissing, he's infinitely more talented at licking pussy. I think I call out. I think I moan. I don't even know because I experience everything through a white haze of sensation. Oh my God. I don't know if I'm a bad person for enjoying this. I certainly can't be a good one. Morality and right and wrong seem far less important when he torments me with long strokes from his tongue. The room fills with the wet, sloppy sounds of the throat tongue-fucking he gives me, and I only want more, crave more, need more. His mouth comes back to my clit, and I rock my hips against each flick of his tongue. I'm unabashed. Unashamed and unfettered. I didn't realize how much I needed this until the orgasm hovers just beneath the surface. As plaintive cries escape my throat, he increases the intensity until I'm either certain I'm going to pass out from its potency or succumb to it. I reach a fever pitch, and then he slides two fingers inside the source of my wetness, and it completely redefines what it means to feel pleasure. He wraps one hand around my thigh to reach the folds of my pussy. Without pausing, he spreads them apart and fastens his lips over my clit as he thrusts his fingers in and out. The combination of his mouth and his touch and the promise of his cock proved to be too much, and I clutch around him with a soundless scream. His assault gentles as he allows me to come down from the aftershocks. You'd think a violent orgasm would allow for a pause, but it only whets my appetite. And as he gets to his feet, I scoot back on the bed as he crouches over me on all fours.
"You don't know how long I've wanted to do that,"
he says. His mouth takes mine roughly, and I taste myself on his lips, which swirls the memory of the first time we were together. "Inside me," I say when I can catch my breath. "I need you inside me."
"That wasn't enough for you?"
he asks. Not at all, I say.
Greedy.
He leans his weight back on his knees between my legs and looks down at me.
Let me look at you,
he says.
I don't want to rush this time.
My head thrashes against the pillow. Later, I say, but he shakes his head.
Don't worry. I'll give you what you need.
I feel the slightly colder metal of the barbell first, and then the long, heavy weight of his cock as he thrusts it along my wet folds. My eyes roll into the back of my head, and I give up trying to plead with him. He wants to torture me. I don't have the willpower inside me to resist. He punishes me with pleasure, which is akin to pain. All I can focus on is the cool glide of the bead as it gathers moisture from my center and slicks over the ultra-sensitive bud of my clit. My hips jerk each time it reaches the apex of its journey, and my hands twist the sheets into ribbons. He grips my thighs underneath my knees and spreads them, lifting my hips to attain just the right angle to torment me. His cock continues to glide against me, tempting us both, when it presses against my opening for the barest of seconds. I'm frantic for him. My brain is incapable of rational thought. I'm powerless to change the angle, to cant my hips to take him inside me because his grip is resolute. This, like most things, is on his terms, at his pace, but it feels so good, I can't complain other than to beg for more, more, more. Then he releases my legs and covers me. Both of our gazes focus on what's happening between us as his cock drags over me one last time. The head of him presses against my entrance, and he groans as I contract around the tip helplessly. The beat of the barbell catches, and he drops down to his forearms, his frame shaking with tension. What is it? I ask breathlessly.
Condom,
he says through gritted teeth.
But I don't know if I can move right now.
He accentuates his statement with a flex of his hips as he pulls back slightly before pushing forward, until my body accepts him just past the point of his piercing. I bare my throat to him on a soundless groan. I can feel the metal inside me, and I ache to have it move so much that it steals the words right from me. It's a long while before I can catch my breath enough to say, I'm on the pill. Doc gave it to me after I... After everything.
Thank fucking God.
He says and drops his head to my shoulder.
I'm clean, as you know.
He adds with a chuckle. Good, because I don't think I could let you go right now. He gets back to his knees and brings my legs up to his shoulders. I open my mouth to ask him to come back down, and then he flexes his hips, and the bead of his piercing drags along a spot inside me that has me seeing stars. I grab for his hands on my legs, scrabbling for something to hold on to, because I'm afraid when I break over the edge, I'll be in a free fall. He clasps my hands with his, where he holds on to my legs, and then all I can do is hold on for dear life. His strokes start out slow and measured, and judging by the look on his face, if he moved any faster, this wouldn't last long for either of us. I honestly don't give a damn either way, because each one lights me up and sends me tumbling down into a mini orgasm so intense, I don't know where one ends and the next begins. When he leans down to kiss me, I clutch at his shoulders, letting all the emotions I've been holding back for months roll through me. They are chased by an explosion of pleasure that tightens me like a vice around his cock, around his body. I rouse from a stupor as he flips me over like a rag doll and positions me ass up in front of him. I only have time to clutch at the sheets before he slams into me, working me back into another orgasm. And then another, before he finally explodes inside me. He rouses me several times during the night with one word.
Again.
And I open my arms, my legs, and my heart to him. Because what we have is dangerous and volatile, but it's also inevitable. 30. bed is empty. There's only a note on the nightstand that says,
"Be back later, G."
Then a hastily added scribble, as if he knew what I would be thinking and wanted to head me off.
"Don't come after me."
I've seen what he can do, but that doesn't mean he can take care of everything on his own, especially not after what happened last night. The son of a bitch should know better. Part of the blood to be spilled is mine for what they stole from me, so it infuriates me that he would leave without me, knowing how I feel about the whole matter. Not that he gives a damn. I throw off the sheets and dress quickly and quietly. The gun Grayson gave me for our outing at the bar is still in the nightstand drawer where I left it. I retrieve it and stow it in the waistband of my jeans. The remnants from the night we spent together twinge and ache, but I ignore them as I peer out the bedroom door. Now that I know my way to the control room, I plan to slip through to it and take one of the sets of keys I saw hanging on the wall. There's no way in hell he's going to do this without me. If I have to hogtie everyone in this whole house, I'm going to find him. As luck would have it, Marie appears before I can descend the stairs.
"Where do you think you're going?"
she asks. I give a passing thought to lying to her, but I swear the woman can read minds. "I'm going to find Grayson," I say, matter-of-factly.
"I don't care if you're 90. If you try to stop me, I will knock you on your ass."
She harumphs and crosses her arms across her chest.
"It's your funeral," she says.
When I'm reasonably sure she won't follow, I increase my speed as I try to retrace my steps to the control room Grayson showed me. If I can just get to one of the vehicles and get away from his house, I'll figure out a way to track him. There has to be GPS of some sort. If not tied to his cell, then certainly in the car itself. Not that I have any earthly idea how to do something like that, but I'm not helpless. I can figure it out. When I reach the security room, the same two bodyguards who were there the day before look up at me simultaneously.
"Where is he keeping Desmond?"
I ask without preamble.
"And don't fuck with me right now."
They share a glance.
"Mr. Kingsley informed us."
I don't give a damn about what Mr. Kingsley said. Either you tell me where he went, or I will find a way to get to him myself. I pull the gun from my waistband and point it at the guy on the left. "Now, either one of you starts talking, or I start shooting things." 10 minutes later, I pull the truck out of its parking space. There should be some remorse for threatening them, but there isn't. I punch in the address the guards provided and consider Grayson's words from the night before. I'm not powerless. I can take care of myself. I've killed a man, wounded others, and evaded the police. I'm sure, according to the United States government, I'm a criminal and a fugitive. No better than what I considered Grayson when we first met. Then it makes me wonder if I was ever the good person in this story. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm the goddamned villain. Sal, it turns out, isn't far away. He keeps a house on the California-Mexico border for when he deals with his Mexican contacts and the cartel for drug shipments. According to Grayson, they hadn't had business dealings for a long time, so that's why it took him a long time to track him down. I don't care as long as I make him pay for what he took from me. The house, which only takes about 45 minutes to get to, is a sprawling contemporary monstrosity. The type of place that screams wealth and privilege. Well, it would, if the front lawn didn't look like a gangland massacre. There are dead bodies everywhere. The guardhouse blocking the driveway is smoking, and the front gate has been mowed down. Call me crazy, but the sight makes my heart go pitter-pat, and my girly parts slide up like the 4th of July. Being the person on the other side of Grayson's homicidal rage may be scary, but being the reason why he's seeking revenge makes my twisted little insides melt just a little bit. I pull up the drive, taking care not to run over any of the bodies before pulling to a stop beside Grayson's SUV. With my gun gripped between my hands, I crouch down and survey the front of the house for movement. Finding none, I slink along the cars toward the front door. I don't hear anything inside, and for a moment, I think I got here too late.
but then the shouting begins. I hear Grayson's voice, and one that sounds like Sal's. Fury burns hot in my belly and cancels out any of the fear I may have had. The front door is wide open, and I peer through, allowing my eyes to adjust to the dim interior. A gun to my temple stops me from taking even a single step inside.
"What the fuck are you doing here?"
Grayson says as his body comes up behind me. "What the hell do you think?" I hiss back, completely aware of the gun he's pressing into my kidney. "You can drop the gun, you know."
"Didn't I tell you to stay at the house?"
"Since when do I fucking listen to you?" I return hotly. "You knew I didn't want to be left behind again." The gun drops, and he forces me around a corner into an alcove off the main hallway.
"I thought after last night you'd understand why I can't have you here."
"I don't give a damn about what you want, Grayson," I say. "Did you really think sex would change that?" There's a scuffling sound down the hall, and we both turn at the same time.
"We'll talk about this later,"
he says against my ear.
"Do you have your gun?"
I hold it up and give a scathing look, which causes him to chuckle. Guess I hadn't hidden it after all.
"Good girl."
Despite my irritation, I smile back at him.
"Stay behind me,"
he says.
"And for God's sake, don't do anything stupid. I didn't work this whole time to keep you safe just for you to get yourself killed."
We're edging around the corner and back into the empty hallway when Sal's voice calls out.
"Might as well get this over with now, King. It isn't like you to drag it out."
Grayson stills in front of me before resuming our trek down the hall. When he doesn't answer, Sal continues.
"Fine, have it your way. I was going to negotiate with you, but if you're going to be unreasonable, we'll have to settle matters some other way."
I highly doubt what Sal has in mind for us has anything to do with negotiations. If he had the balls to torture one woman just to get to Grayson so he could mete out retribution for his son, there wouldn't be anything stopping him from killing us both the moment he lays eyes on us. Our only chance is to get to him first. Then no one will be after Grayson, and I can finally move on from everything. From Vic, from what they did to me. I don't know if that means moving on with Grayson or without him, but I guess that's something we'll both have to figure out when our lives aren't also on the line. We turn a corner that leads to an open living area. Sal waits there with two other men, the same two nameless ones who were there that night with Danny. The devil himself is also there, and based on the vicious expression on his face, I'm surprised he doesn't growl the moment he sets eyes on us. My finger twitches on the side of the trigger, but I force myself to stay calm when I meet Danny's murderous gaze.
"Sal,"
Grayson says as he steps down. His casual, loose limb stride belies the concentration he levels on Sal.
"King, I'm sorry we had to meet again under such circumstances." "No, you're not,"
Grayson says. Sal shrugs and smiles, unrepentant, and then turns his attention to me.
"And this lovely lady. We meet again. I have to tell you, King, this one is special. It isn't every day someone survives Danny and lives to tell about it." "What do you want, Sal?"
Grayson asks. His tone makes it evident he has no patience for Sal's prevaricating.
"I want you dead,"
he says bluntly. He turns and meets my eyes.
"And I'm willing to offer your cute little girlfriend her freedom to start over if she does the deed for me."
I don't let my expression betray anything. "That's a nice offer," I begin. "But it doesn't cover what I want from you." Sal raises a brow and his lips twitch.
"What exactly is that?"
Danny freezes, and I turn to him with a vicious smile on my face. "Him," I say with a nod in his direction. "Dead." Sal considers for a moment, and Danny, who doesn't miss the pause, comes to life with a roar. Grayson jumps in front of me, and the next thing I know, the sound of a gunshot fills the room. 31. I watch Grayson jerk with the force of the bullet and then fall to the floor.
lifeless. Everything stops. My breathing, my heartbeat, my world. Everything. Please don't be dead. Please don't be dead. Just hold on for a few more minutes. You son of a bitch! I grind out through clenched teeth as my gun trains on Danny. The single brain cell between his ears must tell him to be scared because his face drains of all color.
You're a feisty one, aren't you, Gotamia?
Sal croons. I can't tell from my vantage point if the blood coming from Grayson's body is from a fatal shot or just a flesh wound. But I don't dare take my eyes off Danny for fear that I may be next. What do you want? Sal crosses the room as Danny and his friends keep their guns trained on me.
What do I want?
He says as he takes out a decanter of whiskey and pours himself a healthy measure.
I have what I want. The king is dead, or he will be soon. He died knowing his woman was in my hands, her fate to be determined by me. He died knowing how I felt when he murdered my son. Children are everything to me, to my family. King's employers knew that. He was supposed to be off limits.
Spit flies from his mouth.
King should have known better.
If he didn't know it then, he knows it now, you asshole. I shout.
Spare me the theatrics,
Sal says with a wave of a hand. Danny takes a step closer.
I'll take care of her for you, boss.
Don't you fucking dare, I say to him, spit flying. Danny's agitated expression is too animated, too nervous just under the surface. Wait. You didn't tell him, did you? Sal takes another drink and sets the glass down on the bar.
Tell me what? She's fucking crazy, boss.
Danny interrupts.
Delusional. She'd have to be a whore for King. Who can sleep with a psycho like that without medication?
Sal stops him with a raised hand. To me, he says.
Tell me what?
I lift my chin. I was 8 weeks pregnant with King's baby when your guys picked me up. I look at Danny with all the loathing and hate I can muster. I wasn't pregnant anymore when they were through with me. My words fall like stones to the bottom of a lake, the ripples shifting and affecting everything in their wake. Danny's head drops, and he turns to Sal with his hands held up in defense.
I didn't know,
he says miserably. Sal's rage billows across his face, turning it a florid red.
You fucking idiot,
he says.
If you weren't family, I'd put a bullet in your head myself. We don't murder children. Let me save you the trouble.
Grayson rasps from the floor, making all eyes in the room swing to him just as a second shot thunders through the air around us. A red circle blooms right over Danny's left eye. His legs fold under his dead weight, and he falls to the floor, landing with a thud. The next two shots take down the thugs on either side of Danny before I've even processed the first. Sal bellows in fury, and like I had all those months ago, I react instinctually to protect the one man I can't seem to live without. The gun fires with the barest of pressure on the trigger, and Sal flies backward and lands with a crash on the couch. After a few seconds of stunned silence, while we both process what the fuck just happened, Grayson looks up at me.
I got hurt again.
I surprise us both by flying at him and punching him in the jaw. What the fuck were you thinking, you psychotic, suicidal asshole? Did you think you were being heroic, jumping in front of a bullet? Did you think I'd be grateful watching you die right in front of my eyes? He drops back down to the ground and covers his face with his uninjured arm.
If you're going to yell, can you do it a bit more quietly? My head is pounding like a son of a bitch. I think I nosedived into the tile.
Oh, you better be glad you're hurt. If you weren't, I would rip your balls off with my bare hands.
I think I've been a bad influence on you,
he says, smiling, even though he's nearly ghost white beneath his tan.
You're far more violent now than you were when we first met.
I wonder why. Before we do anything else, I inspect the wound on his shoulder.
Thankful it isn't life-threatening, I tear a strip of my shirt and wrap it around his upper arm, taking pleasure in his pained grunts as I do. "You shouldn't have done that," I say when I finish and the bloom of fear and anger passes. "I thought you were going to die."
"There was a time when you would have been happy about that."
I let the comment pass because the numbness of adrenaline that had been pushing me all day fades into shock. I came far, far too close to losing him. He tips up my chin.
"Hey, you didn't. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere."
Ignoring the bodies on the floor around us, I crouch down to help lift him into a sitting position. When he's able, I heft his weight up and help shoulder him to the door. Instead of going down that rabbit hole of a conversation, I change the subject. "What are we going to do about this mess? Are there going to be more mob bosses and henchmen after us in the morning?" Grayson blows out a breath as we limp our way back to the vehicles. I don't need to hold him. He injured his arm, not his legs, but I can't quite seem to make myself let him go. I need to hold him to keep myself from shaking.
"They probably won't ever stop. I don't exactly make friends in my line of work."
"Good to know. Are we going to take my car or yours?" I ask as we reach them. He looks at me with an expression that's a mixture of exasperation and confusion.
"That's all you have to say about it?"
"We'll deal with it tomorrow," I say simply. "Now which car?" He shakes his head.
"I don't care. I'll have some of my guys get the other when they come back for cleanup."
"You have guys who do..." "Never mind," I say, waving my arms. "I don't want to know." 32. The house looks different when we pull up. Not that I'm surprised. I've never driven to Grayson's house willingly. And when he brought me here, it was the middle of the night, and I was unconscious. I offered to drive because he's wounded, but he wasn't hearing any of it. Blood still seeps from the bandages, and I sigh as he gets out of the car with a grunt. He doesn't object when I lead him to the bathroom on the first floor, which is where I've taken to having medical supplies stocked for just this reason. "Sit," I tell him, and he eases himself under the closed lid of the toilet.
"Getting into a habit,"
he says and looks up at me, his eyes partially lidded with pain and a touch of humor. He'd said something similar when I had to bandage his wounds while he was at Blackthorn. Tenderness blooms inside me like a lone flower taking root in the cracked surface of neglected concrete. To cover it, I lower my face to help him remove his shirt, taking care to maneuver it around his shoulder. The wound doesn't look bad. He should count himself lucky he didn't do more damage. After I gather my supplies, I brush my hands through his hair, just because I need to touch him for my own reassurance, and he leans into my palm. "Someone has to look after you," I say finally.
"Are you offering?"
he asks. I don't answer, because I don't know. I'm quiet as I finish applying the new bandage, and the silence grows so overwhelming that I'm afraid to break it. He must see it on my face because he opens his mouth to speak and then closes it when he decides better. His jaw ticks with indecision and he gives himself a shake.
"Come to me when you figure it out,"
he says and then pauses to kiss my forehead. The single most affectionate gesture he's ever expressed. And it nearly cracks me in two. I suppose it's progress that he doesn't lock me inside my room. And then I almost laugh. For a moment, I have to fight a smile. How is it that a cage with Grayson is appealing? Maybe because within these walls, I found freedom, even if it was at the hands of my captor. I clean up the mess and stow the supplies as my mind works through my options. Grayson isn't a good man. He'd be the first to tell me. He's ruthless, bloodthirsty, and lawless. He lives by no one else's rules but his own, and he doesn't apologize for it. I can picture my life without him. It's a beautiful one. I'd get a new identity, one that doesn't have a warrant out for their arrest, and I'd eventually settle down with a man, get a house, a dog, and have a couple of kids. It was the life I wanted when I met Vic, the life I thought we'd have together. Now I can't imagine a life that doesn't have Grayson in it. The lows are low, but the highs, the rush he gives me each time I see him, there is no comparison. I spin around to find him and nearly run right into him. "I thought you were giving me space," I say, stunned. His hands fist at his sides, his chest is stained with blood, and his face is already darkening with bruises.
"I changed my mind,"
he says. My teeth bite into the soft flesh of my cheek. "You did?" He takes a measured step forward.
"Yes."
"And what did you decide?" Grayson steps close enough that he can lift my chin with a finger. His expression is serious, and even though he can barely open one eye, his gaze is solemn.
"I decided I was right when I locked you here so you couldn't get away and get yourself into trouble."
I bristle a little, but he places a finger over my lips.
"I wanted you here so I could make sure you were safe. Seeing you in the warehouse like that, it isn't something I'll ever forget. I realized when you came running into the room and Danny turned the gun on you that I didn't want to spend another day that didn't have you in it. Letting you leave would be doing just that, so I'll chain your ass to the bed if I must to keep you in my life."
"And if I said I still wanted to leave, you wouldn't let me go?"
"No,"
he says with vicious finality.
"No, I wouldn't."
He pauses to take my lips. I taste the metallic burst of blood from his split lip, but underneath, there's the intoxicating flavor of him, and I sigh, stepping forward to press against him more completely.
"I wouldn't let you go,"
he says against my lips.
"But I'd spend every day convincing you to stay."
"How do you think you'd accomplish that?" I'm breathing more heavily now, and my heart, which is still thrumming from the adrenaline of our escape, beats double time.
"How about I show you?"
he says. I shiver against him as he tugs me down the hall. He presses kisses to my jaw and ear, and then curses under his breath, and plasters me against the wall in the stairwell. My hands go to his waist to tug at his belt loops and pull him against me.
"You trying to distract me?"
he asks as he tongues the hollow in my throat. "Maybe. Is it working?" He nudges his erection against me, and I suck in a breath.
"You tell me,"
he says. I groan and tug him down the hallway. "I think I need some more convincing," I say with an impish grin. "That is, if you aren't too hurt." We reach his door, and he presses into me from behind, the hardness of his cock nudging against the cleft of my ass.
"Never. I'd be dying and I'd still be hard for you."
He opens the door, and we tumble inside enough to slam it shut. I struggle to turn, but he keeps my back pressed to his front and arranges my hands above my head.
"Keep them there,"
he growls, and I'm strung so tight I don't have the willpower to argue. Behind me, I hear the sound of him shucking his clothes, the clink of his belt buckle coming undone, the crash of it against the floor, the click of his zipper, the whisper of his pants hitting the floor. By the time I feel his warmth at my back again, I'm shaking. I start to lower my hands, which earns me a nip to my shoulder in retaliation.
"I thought I said to keep them there."
"Please," I whisper. "I want to touch you."
"You will. Patience, little mouse."
He kisses the spotty bit and soothes it with his tongue. I do as he asks, but only because he keeps touching me without interruption. My head falls back, and I moan to the ceiling as his hands palm my breasts, kneading through the thin material of my shirt. "Take it off," I beg. And he does, slipping the shirt over my head and tossing it away. "All of it." This time, he teases instead of listening, and it makes me shift from foot to foot and throw my hair back. His palms cup my breasts over my bra, and then he's drawing circles along the cotton. There's enough padding that I can't feel him, but I know his touch is just one layer away, and it drives me crazy. When I'm mindlessly writhing against him, he tugs the cups down to bear me to his touch. Skilled fingers pay homage to my nipples, pulling deeper moans from me. He tweaks them, just enough to cause me twin edges of pain and pleasure, and then he releases the clasp, and his hands travel down to the waistband of my jeans. My breath stalls in my chest as his fingers dance along the edge. "Please," I whisper, and this time he gives me what I want by unbuttoning my pants and diving underneath. He uses one hand to turn my head so he can meet my lips, and the other to find the wetness with the slightest brush of his fingers.
"So ready,"
he says.
"I think you like the idea of staying here with me. Has my little mouse turned into a cat?"
I mumble unintelligible words against his lips and feel him smile. My heart flips over in my chest, and I know there will be no surviving him. There is no recovery for what he does to me, no walking away. Even if it was an option, I don't think I could. His tongue invades, plunders, conquers, and I meet him stroke for stroke, eliciting a groan from deep in his throat. The hand at my throat tightens, reminding me unerringly of the first time he had me against a wall. The memory comes to life and causes me to shift against him, hips searching for an easement of the hurricane whipping around inside me. He only presses closer, so I'm pinned between his body and the door. I tremble with the need for release, the ache to touch him and express all the things I can't with words.
"Shh, I've got you,"
he says as his fingers start to move against me. All I can do is take it. He keeps up the sweet torture until the door vibrates with the result of the tension growing inside me. Just when I think he's going to push me over the edge, he pulls back and allows my arms to drop to my sides. I turn, and he takes me in his arms and guides me to the bed. Greedily, I take him into my arms and accept his weight on top of me. My legs wrap around his waist and pull him close.
"Wait,"
he says, a smile in his voice.
"Not so fast, little heathen."
"I can't wait," I tell him and undulate against him. "Now." He tugs down my jeans with the little space I allow him to have, and then he's back against me.
"I'm going to take my time,"
he says, and he does. It feels like some part of penance for everything he'd ever done wrong toward me. The manipulations when he was in prison, locking me up, being responsible for my pain. He worships me with the softest touches, the most maddening caresses, until I'm near tears with the power of my need. He never made any apologies for what he's done, and I realize he doesn't have to any more than I have to thank him for saving me. Tears leak from the corners of my eyes, and he laps them up just as he thrusts inside me. My breath catches in my throat as his piercing hits all the sensitive spots inside me and strokes them to life. His thrusts are slow, measured, and when I open my eyes, I find him watching me.
"Stay with me,"
he says, right before his mouth finds mine in a soft kiss.
"Tell me you'll stay with me. I can't lose you."
I lift my hands to his hair and peer into his eyes. "You couldn't get rid of me if you tried." My words do something to him, and his thrusts quicken. His hold convulses around me, and I realize maybe he needs me to soothe the broken parts of him as much as I need him to show me there's someone who needs me in return. As I come around him, surrounded by his arms and anchored by his weight, I know there isn't a chance in hell I'm giving up another minute without him by my side. If he's an addiction, I welcome the rush. Give me another hit, and another, until it kills me, or gives me a taste of heaven. I lose myself in his kiss, his touch,
his toxic love. Epilogue.
The prosecution calls Tessa Emerson to the stand.
In another life, as I walked to the stand, fear would have held me in its grip, much as my ex-husband had in the time we were married. I'm no stranger to its dark embrace, but now I face my fears instead of running. The bailiff leads me to the stand, and I sit facing a room full of people who have already sat through hours of witness testimony. There were a few guards who testified that Vic was an upstanding man and husband, but those testimonies were canceled out as soon as Annie took the stand. Apparently, I hadn't hidden anything from her, and she recounted every single bruise and broken rib I'd shown up to work with. That wasn't all. She produced picture upon picture of me at my desk, me bent over patients, and me hugging my ribs. In each one of them, the jury could see the blooms of purple and blue over my skin in various spots.
"Do you solemnly swear that you will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?"
The bailiff says in a bored voice. "I do," I say. Grayson isn't in the room, of course, as he's wanted for the murder of Tino Salvatore, and for his escape, but he's around, watching, waiting. I draw strength from that knowledge as the prosecution grills me about my marriage to Vic. I answer the questions as honestly as I can. When I shot him, I acted in self-defense, and they have no evidence to say otherwise.
"You mean to say you stayed in an abusive relationship for years? Did you ever try to leave?"
"Yes, on several occasions."
"And what happened?"
"He beat me." The lawyer smirks, and the audience twitters.
"You didn't think to go to the police and report his behavior?"
"I did, once."
"Once? And what happened?"
I turn my attention to the Honorable Judge Edward Milton, who shifts in his seat and raises my eyebrows, silently asking if he really wants me to answer this question in open court. He calls a recess, but it doesn't matter. Once Grayson and I decided it would be in my best interest to clear my name, I knew it was only a matter of time before I was brought face to face with the man who told me women should obey their husbands. The gray pallor bleaching his triple chin tells me he hasn't forgotten me either. As the courtroom empties, the bailiff gives me the go-ahead to get down from the stand. The prosecutor sneers at me, and I give him a wink in return. It's not his fault he has a thankless job. And besides, I have bigger things to worry about. I wait in the hall until it empties completely. Nearly all the employees have taken advantage of the lull to slip out to lunch, so no one notices when I carefully maneuver around the velvet rope delineating the public and private sectors of the courthouse. No one stops me on my way back to the judge's private rooms. It's a small town, and though everyone knows everyone, they are also too damn polite to tell me I'm not supposed to be there. I reach Judge Milton's door and enter without knocking. He doesn't seem too surprised to see me, considering he's more focused on the gun Grayson has against his temple. I close the door behind me and sit in a comfortably worn leather chair situated in front of his desk. Judge Milton opens his mouth to speak, but it snaps closed when Grayson nudges him with the gun.
"This isn't the talking part. This is the listening part."
"I see you do remember me," I say. "Good. Then you must know why I'm here. I'm going to keep this quick because you're not worth wasting my time. I will be cleared of all suspicion in my husband's death, and you will make sure that happens. If you don't, well, I don't think we need to be crass. Do you understand?" A bead of sweat trails down his forehead and plops onto his pristine desk. When he doesn't answer, I lean forward. "This is the talking part." A couple of hours later, I walk out of the courthouse and get into the nondescript SUV waiting at the curb. Grayson tugs me by the neck and kisses me long and hard, oblivious to the line of cars behind us waiting for us to move.
"You're a free woman now,"
he says when he's done.
"What are you going to do with the rest of your life?"
"That's a good question. Got any ideas?" He sends me a look that has my stomach clenching in anticipation.
Oh, I've got a few.
I'm sure you do. But we have to do one thing first. He takes my hand and presses it to his lips as he navigates through traffic.
Yeah, what's that?
Why don't I show you? I say as we come to a stoplight. Grayson glances over, and I pull out a photo from my purse and hand it to him.
What have we got here?
He asks. A surprise, I say. You might want to pull over, so we don't block traffic.
I like surprises.
He does as I instruct and pulls off the road and into an empty parking lot. If there are memories that keep me up at night and make me question why I was put on this earth to endure the things I have, then there are also memories that remind me why I keep going, keep fighting. A lot of them feature Grayson in some way or another, but none of them will ever top this one.
Tessa, what is this?
He asks, though we both know the answer. Grayson, I don't know what the future holds for us, and I don't care. All I know is I can't imagine one without you in it. I love you so much. I didn't think we'd ever have this chance again, but now that we do, I'm so glad it's with you. He looks up from the ultrasound picture and says,
You're pregnant?
Before I can answer, he takes me into his arms and crushes me to his chest.
There aren't words to describe what I feel for you,
he says.
But if there were, they'd still never be enough.
So, you're happy? I ask as happy tears fill my eyes.
I'm ecstatic, sweetheart.
He kisses me again and then says,
Let's go home.
This has been Toxic, a dark romance written by Nicole Blanchard. Performed by Michelle Sparks and Aiden Snow, members of SAG-AFTRA. Executive producer, Heather Costa. Editing and post-production by Soundscape Audio. Mastering by Jeffrey Kafer. Copyright 2023 by Nicole Blanchard. Production copyright 2024. All rights reserved. This has been a High Gravity Productions presentation.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.